time, and the moment we arrived, Minnie and I had been ushered to a waiting area, whilst Mother was put on a trolley and wheeled off somewhere else. The minutes ticked, ticked, ticked by, and still nothing. No word, no nurses, no doctors, nothing. I looked down at my twisting hands on my lap. Please, God, please. Minerva! Persephone! Ah, there you are. Juno Islet, Dad's personal secretary, marched along the corridor towards us. Minnie sprung to her feet. Following her lead, I did the same. It's a shame you two didn't have your wits about you, Juno told us. Puzzled, I looked from Juno to Minnie, who was just as baffled as I was. You should have phoned me first rather than phone for an ambulance on a landline. The story is already out that your mother took an overdose because your dad has found someone else. Juno frowned. This is going to take some fancy footwork on my part. I shook my head, convinced that my mind was playing tricks. Surely I'd heard that wrong. I must have. No one could be so thoughtless, so heartless. Mother tried to commit suicide, Minnie whispered. Of course she didn't, Juno scoffed, taking out her mobile phone. Anyone who tries to commit suicide takes a lot more than 4 sleeping tablets. She was just trying to get attention and sympathy. She pressed a series of numbers on her phone. I turned to my sister. Minnie? What? Hi, Sanchez! Juno's voice cut across my own. Listen, we need to call in a few favours. I'm at the hospital and... Yes, of course she's fine. It's nothing at all, I promise you. But we need to spread the word that it was an accident. Nothing more. Yes. Yes. Minnie snatched the phone out of Juno's hand and threw it to the ground before grinding it under the heel of her boot. I stared at my sister, my heart racing, my eyes alight with newfound admiration. How dare you? Juno began. You can go to hell! Minnie screamed at her. You're a spoilt brat, Minerva Hadley. And you're an insensitive cow! And with that, my sister marched off towards the casualty department. I smirked at Juno before I ran to catch up with my sister. She glanced my way, her expression grim. Electric, Minerva! Just electric! I told her. And whilst she didn't smile, the grim expression on her face softened slightly.
Chapter 40. It was the day of Lynette's funeral, a week after her accident. A week of no school, no tears, no nothing. I'd gone for a late morning walk down to the beach, alone. I stood on the sand, wearing my one and only formal blue suit, and watched the waves lap back and forth, wondering why they did that. What was the point, if there was one? Did anything in this world have a point, or was Lynette right? At last I walked home, alone. Only to find our house filled to overflowing with people. Friends, family, neighbours, strangers. I hadn't expected all these people. I couldn't cope with them. A quiet funeral, Dad had said. It looked like we had every Norton Meadowview struggling to get into our living room. I stood in a corner and watched for a while. Friends and strangers alike fought to be the first to say how sorry they were and spout on about tragic accidents and wasted lives. So many people had come to pay their last respects that our front and backyards were both full, never mind the house. The level of noise from all the chatter was incessant. I reckoned it wouldn't be long before I'd have to escape somewhere for some peace and quiet or I'd explode. Jude was with some of his friends, the now permanently somber expression on his face. He wasn't saying much, but he was drinking. Lager, I think it was, and from the way he was swaying on his feet, it obviously wasn't his first. Well, if he wanted to be stupid, then I for one wasn't going to stop him. Let him make a fool of himself for all I cared. The whole world could go to hell for all I cared. What would Linny have made of all this fuss? She'd probably have been as bewildered by it as I was. And what would Mum and Dad and Jude say if they found out that Linny's accident was anything but? Stupid question. I knew what they'd say, how they'd feel. So, they would never know. I'd burnt the torn-up bits of Linny's letter. No one but me knew what had really happened, and I vowed that it would stay that way. I owed Mum and Dad that much, especially Mum. The noise around me was relentless. I rubbed my already throbbing temples. Had Mum and Dad really invited all these people? Where was Dad anyway? I hadn't seen him for a while. Nor Mum, for that matter. I moved around the room as best I could, shaking hands and nodding my thanks at all the "I'm so sorry"s bombarding me from every direction. Just when I thought I'd have to duck out of there or burst, I finally saw Dad. He was huddled in a corner with two other men. One had untidy, wavy blonde hair tied back in a ponytail, and he wore a trim moustache. The other had dark, chestnut-brown hair, and the kind of tan that must have been paid for. He looked almost mixed race, lucky beggar. How I wished I could afford the treatment to make my skin permanently darker. I started to walk towards them, but the intense, solemn look on all their faces halted my steps. I watched, concentrating hard and trying to read their lips. Even though I'd never done it before, it was as if somehow I'd convinced myself that all I had to do was focus, to be the best lip reader in the world. Well, the best naught lip reader at any rate. Dad wasn't saying much. He nodded, then nodded again. A word here, a nod there, that's all he did. It seemed to be enough for the two men, though, because as the conversation went on, they began to smile and pat Dad on the back. Then one of them pressed something into Dad's hand. Dad didn't look at it, but immediately stuffed it into his jacket pocket. Out of the corner of my eye, I saw Mum enter the room. She looked around for Dad. She saw him and immediately started making her way through the crowd in Dad's direction. Then she stopped. She noticed who Dad was with. Fury flashed across her face. She pushed towards them even more vigorously then. I was so busy watching Mum watching Dad that I wasn't aware of the silence sweeping through the room until it had reached and passed me. Looking around, I saw that every eye was on something going on behind me. No one spoke, no one moved. I turned, wondering what could have happened to cause such a reaction. Seeing her was like a boxer's punch to my stomach. I was actually winded and breathless. Seffi. What was she doing here? Was she mad? Stillness rippled out from her, like the ripples when a stone is thrown into a pond. Seffi walked towards me, looking straight at me. But she didn't say a word. Then her gaze swept past me, her face set as she walked on by. I turned, as did everyone else, to see what she was going to do. She walked up to my mum, who was only a couple of steps away from my dad by now. "Mr. and Mrs. McGregor, I just wanted to come and see you to say how sorry I am about Lynette. I know what you're going through. My mother... I know..." Seffi's voice trailed off. She would have had to have the hide of a rhino not to pick up on the atmosphere in the room. "I hope I'm not intruding or anything. I just wanted to say... I'm sorry." Mum was the first to recover. "You're not intruding, Miss Hadley." She stepped forward. "Thank you for coming. Can I get you a drink?" Seffi looked around at all the people staring at her. Most of the faces now suspicious and hostile. "No, I don't think I should stay." "Nonsense. You've come this far. You can't leave without a drink. Can she, Ryan?" Mum spoke directly to Dad. Dad was alone in the corner of the room. The two men he'd been talking to had vanished, seemingly into thin air. But it didn't matter. Seffi had all of Dad's attention. He was glaring at her like she was some kind of disgusting fungus he'd found growing in his navel. It was exactly like the look Mrs. Hadley shot at me when I went to see Seffi after she'd been beaten up. Exactly like it. "Ryan?" Mum's stern voice had Dad raising his head to look at her. "Hello, Miss Hadley," Dad managed to spit out. "I'll go. Seffi." I stepped forward, but Jude got in first. "Yes, go,"
he said furiously. Who told you to come here in the first place? You and your false sympathy aren't wanted. Jude, that's enough, Mum told him firmly. If she cares so much, where was she for the last 3 years when Lynette was out of her head and we didn't have two beans to rub together, never mind the money to get Linny the help she needed? Where was this dagger when you got fired, Mum, and I had to drop out of school? Where was she when Harry over there got the boot? Jude pointed to a man by the door. And all because she wanted to behave like a brat, even though she knew it would get him into trouble. Sophie was staring at this guy, Harry, who was glaring right back at her. I'd never seen him before in my life. What did he have to do with Sophie?
Our new chauffeur told me you decided to quit. Sophie's voice was little more than a whisper, but in the stillness of the room it was enough for everyone to hear.
I got fired because you were left alone to face the riot of your school, Harry called bitterly across the room. I begged you to stay in the car, but you didn't want to, remember? When your face was plastered all over the TV screen and I was nowhere to be seen, your mother kicked me out so fast I'll have the imprint of her foot on my backside till the day I die. Whispered comments full of anger and antagonism swept around the room. Sophie shook her head, shocked.
I didn't know. I swear, I didn't know.
Didn't take the trouble to find out either. Harry turned away in disgust. You and others like you have brought us nothing but grief. Jude pushed Sophie hard against her shoulder. Some of the others in the room gasped at his audacity. Shoving a cross like that was just asking for trouble, but Jude was way past caring. And then you have the nerve to come over here. Mrs. McGregor, Mr. McGregor, Sophie appealed to them for help. Persephone, I think it's best you should leave, Dad told her directly.
But I haven't done anything, said Sophie, bewildered.
That's right, you haven't, Dad agreed pointedly. You come here in your fancy dress, which costs more than I make in a year, and we're supposed to smile and cheer. Is that how it's meant to work?
No,
Sophie whispered. Just go away, Jude hissed at her. Go on, get lost, before I do something I'll regret.
Sophie looked around. Her eyes met mine. I tried to step forward, but some woman behind me grabbed my arm and pulled me back.
Let her go. Noughts and crosses don't mix, boy, the woman whispered to me.
Sophie shook her head and darted from the room. I could see only too well the shimmer in her eyes as she ran past me. Even though the room was full to capacity, a pathway opened up for her like Angel Shaka's parting of the sea.
You had no right to do that, Jude. Mum waited until Sophie had gone before rounding on my brother. Oh, yes, he did, Dad answered before Jude could open his mouth. She wasn't wanted here. Jude only told her the truth.
Mum wasn't the only one to stare at Dad. Where had all that come from? I thought Dad's motto was to live and let live. When had that changed? When Linny died? Or maybe it was there all the time and I'd just chosen not to see it.
Ryan, Mum said. Around us, people started talking again, nervous, embarrassed chatter. I reached Mum's side at the same time as Dad. He stopped and looked straight at Mum, a cold, hard expression on his face I'd never seen before. Meggie, he said, my ineffectual days are over.
Then he moved past her. Mum turned to stare after him. I watched Dad's retreating back. There was something about him. The way he walked, the way he talked. Something in his voice scared me. Scared the living daylights out of me.
Chapter 41. It had only been 3 years since Callum's mum had worked for mine. 3 short years. 3 years had passed like 3 minutes to me. But walking into Callum's house had been like walking into a room full of strangers. I remembered Callum's mum and dad so clearly, but my memory of them was nothing like the reality. They hadn't wanted me there. Not one of them had. With everything that had happened to my mother, I wanted to show them that I really did care, that I understood. Minnie and I could have so easily been in the same boat as Callum, no matter what Juno said. Each move I made in Callum's direction just seemed to pave my way faster to hell.
Chapter 42. I went and sat down beside Seffi on the beach. Neither of us spoke. I was getting sand on my one good suit, but I didn't care. I was past caring. "I didn't mean any harm, Callum," Seffi said at last. "I know, but it wasn't the best idea I've ever had in my life," Seffi sighed. "Not as such, no," I said. "I can't seem to do anything right at the moment," Seffi said at last. There wasn't a trace of self-pity in her voice, just the merest hint of sadness. "I'm sorry about your sister, Callum. I just wanted to show how much. I thought sending a card would be a bit impersonal." "Exactly," Seffi sighed again. "It was just a spur-of-the-moment thing to walk over to your house. I thought it'd make a difference somehow." I didn't know what to say to that, so I said nothing. "This is growing up, isn't it?" Seffi asked. "I think it is," I nodded. "Would you put your arm around me, please?" I hesitated. Seffi sighed. "If you'd rather not..." "No, it's not that." Seffi gave me one of her looks. "I just..." "Never mind." I put my arm around her. She put her head on my shoulder and we both sat and watched the waves foam up on the beach and the shadows lengthen.
The Split. Chapter 43. Minnie and I walked along the corridor towards Mother's private room. It had been 2 weeks since Mother's accident. Carl, our chauffeur, brought us to see Mother each evening, and although Mother was physically better, her behaviour was really making me worry. The mother I'd got used to over the last few years had disappeared, and in her place... "Minerva? Persephone! I'm so glad to see you! I've missed you both so much! Come and give me a hug." Minnie and I glanced at each other before doing as we'd been asked. Mother hugged Minnie, then gave me a bear hug which left me breathless. "I love both of you so much," she told us, her voice trembling with emotion. "You know that, don't you?" Minnie nodded, embarrassed. "We love you too, Mother," I said, feeling very uncomfortable. I wasn't used to Mother saying such things. Geez, I wasn't used to Mother saying much of anything. "I know you love me." Mother pulled me to her to kiss both my cheeks. It was only by a supreme effort that I didn't wipe my face the moment she released me. "You're the only ones who care whether I live or die," Mother continued. The gratitude in her voice made me feel incredibly uncomfortable. And guilty. Had Dad been to see her yet? "Your friends would visit you too if you told them you were in here," Minnie pointed out. "No! No! I don't want anyone! No, I'll see them when I leave." "When will that be?" "When I'm all better," Mother announced brightly. Too brightly. Minnie and I exchanged another look. "Are you coming to see me tomorrow?" Mother asked. "Yes, of course," Minnie said. "Do me a favour. Could you bring me my makeup bag? I feel naked without my makeup." "Okay, Mother," Minnie said quietly. Mother was still smiling, a frantic, almost manic look on her face. "Oh, and a bottle of champagne to celebrate my lucky escape." Mother laughed. "Champagne?" "Yes, of course. Or failing that, some white wine will do." "Mother, I don't think that's a good idea." "Just do as you're told." The first crack appeared in Mother's mask. She plastered it over with a broad smile. "Sorry, love. I'm a bit on edge. If you don't help me, Minnie, no one else will. Your father hasn't even been to see me. Not a phone call, not so much as a get well soon card. An even wider smile than before. So, I'm celebrating. Today is the first day of the rest of my life. So, bring me what I asked for. Okay, sweetie? Okay, Mother. Good girl. I love you, Minerva. Yes, Mother. My two best girls. Mother leaned back with a smile. Her smile faded into a look of such intense sadness that I could hardly bear to look at her. Here's a little life lesson for my two best girls. Never make a mistake, because it will never be forgiven or forgotten. Never put a foot out, and you'll never put a foot wrong. I don't understand, Mother. Minerva frowned. I made a mistake once. Mother's eyes were closed now, and her voice was far away and dreamy. I did something I shouldn't have. But I was lonely. Your father was never at home, and I was so tired of being alone. But he found out. I made a mistake, you see, and I've never stopped paying for it. Mother, it doesn't... So don't be like me. Mother opened her eyes and smiled brightly. Be perfect, my perfect little girls. I love you so much. I bent down, untying my shoelace so that I could tie it up again. A single tear splashed down onto my shoe, but Mother didn't see it. So that was okay.
Chapter 44. I am going out. Mum pulled on her jacket as she spoke. Where? Dad stood up from the table where he'd been poring over some kind of map with Jude. For a walk. The front door was now open. Meggie, how much longer are you going to carry on like this? Said Dad. Like what? Asked Mum, her back to us. Jude and I exchanged a glance. Lynette's funeral was over 3 months ago now, and Dad wasn't the only one who'd changed. Most nights Mum had taken to going for long walks, returning long after I'd gone to bed and was meant to be asleep. Christmas had come and gone in our house without much cheer. The new year had started and here we all were, occupying opposite ends of the compass. Dad sighed, exasperated. Meggie, why won't you talk to us? To me? Mum turned, her eyes ablaze. Will you give that up? She asked, pointing to the long map spread out all over our table. No. Then we have nothing to say to each other. Meggie! Mum headed out of the door, slamming it shut behind her. What's going on, Dad? I asked. Dad was still staring at the front door. I doubt if he even heard me. I tried to move closer to the table, but Jude rolled up the map before I had a chance to take a good look at it. I did see enough of it this time, though, to realise that it wasn't just a map. It was a blueprint. Come on, Jude, we've got work to do, Dad said grimly. Where are you going, Dad? I asked. Out. Out where? I asked. To a meeting. What meeting? None of your business, Dad replied tersely, pulling on his coat. Where is it? That's none of your business either. Jude ran a large elastic band round the now rolled-up blueprint and went to join Dad. He put the blueprint down by his feet and put on his jacket, which was hanging on a hook by the door. There was no way he was going to let that blueprint out of his sight. I regarded both Jude and Dad, standing together at the front door, looking in every way like father and son, and I felt totally excluded. How come Jude gets to go with you and I don't? Because you're not old enough, said Dad. Jude snorted and muttered something under his breath. At Dad's warning look, he shut up. What were both of them up to? A house of secrets. That's what my home had become. Mum had withdrawn to a place where none of us were able to reach her, and on top of that, Jude and Dad were doing something where I wasn't wanted. And I missed Lynette so much. She never said very much, and goodness knows she never did much, but it was like she was the glue that kept our family together, and now that she was gone, we were each floating further and further away from one another. Something else to hate my sister for. Please, let me come with you, I pleaded. I didn't know where Mum was, and I didn't want to be on my own.
I needed to belong somewhere, to something, to someone. No way, Jude shot out before Dad could open his mouth. I won't be any trouble. Yeah, right, Jude scoffed.
Dad walked over to me and placed a hand on my shoulder. Callum, where we're going, you can't follow.
Why not? If Jude's old enough to belong to the Liberation Militia, then so am I.
What? Dad spun around.
Jude, you stupid boy, what have you been saying? You know we're not meant...
I didn't say anything, Dad, I swear, Jude denied vehemently.
Jude didn't tell me, I said.
Then who did? Dad asked brusquely.
No one. I worked it out for myself. I'm not stupid, I told him. So, can I come with you now?
No way. We're going to a Liberation Militia meeting and you're too young. Besides, if you were seen, it'd be the end of your school career. Is that what you want?
I don't care. I'm just wasting my time at Heathcroft and everyone knows it.
I shrugged away from Dad's hand. Collins dropped out and Shania's been expelled for no reason. And everyone's taking bets on how much longer Amu and I are going to be there. Besides, I was thinking of leaving anyway.
Over my dead body, Dad flared up at once. You are going to school and you'll stay at school until you're 18 and then you'll go on to university. Do I make myself clear?
I looked away from him, my lips firmly together.
Callum, I asked you a question.
Dad grabbed my chin and forced my face around till I had no choice but to look directly at him.
You will not leave school without any qualifications. Understand?
Yeah. Okay, I mumbled. Dad headed for the door, beckoning to Jude as he did so.
And don't bother blabbing to your dagger friend about us being in the Liberation Militia, Jude hissed at me. Not unless you want to put a noose around our necks.
Both Dad and Jude left the house without a backward glance, and once again I was alone.
Chapter 45. Minnie was reading one of those 10 Ways to Get Your Man women's magazines that are incredibly, tediously boring. But Minnie's 16, 2 years older than me, so I guessed it was only a matter of time before I started reading that stuff too. Right now, though, I had other things on my mind. I licked my lips nervously. Minnie, what are we going to do? What do you mean? My sister was being either really thick or really evasive. Mother, her drinking's getting worse, I said. She's just smoothing out the rough edges. Minnie smiled wryly as she answered with Mother's often repeated line, trotted out whenever we try to bring up the subject of her drinking. Any smoother, and she won't have to walk places, she'll just roll, I frowned. You tell her that, Minnie challenged. My sister was no use at all. I huffed impatiently so she'd get the message, but her nose was already back in her magazine. Mum had been at home for a while now, and she was steadily getting worse. She spent a lot of time in her room, and when she did emerge, it was always to smother us with kisses and tell us how much she loved us before she made her way to the wine cellar or the kitchen. Funny how she always reeked of expensive perfume as she smothered us with hugs and kisses. It was a close-run thing to say which was the most overpowering, her perfume or her kisses, or maybe her attempts to prove to us that she wasn't drinking anymore. She wasn't fooling anyone. Because it was so obvious. She was growing more and more out of it, sadder and lonelier, and worse. And there wasn't a single thing I could do about it.
Chapter 46. Saturday. It was 18 days and 5 months after Lynette's death. Funny I should think of it that way. The days before the months. My 16th birthday in February had come and gone, with a card and a book signed from both Mum and Dad, but bought and wrapped by Mum. It hadn't been much of a birthday. No one had felt like celebrating, and sitting round the table cutting the birthday cake had been a silent affair, because Linny wasn't there. The winter had come and gone, and spring had arrived, and nothing had changed. Funny that not a single day had passed without me thinking about Lynette. When she was here, she so often just seemed to fade into the background, like something that's always there, but you never really think about, like air. But now that she was gone... Lynette's secret still hung heavily over me, like a shroud. No one knew the truth about her death except me. And with each passing day, the longing to tell someone grew stronger. There was Sethi, but each time I tried to tell her the truth about my sister, the words just wouldn't come out. It felt like I was being disloyal to not just Lynette, but my whole family by wanting to tell Sethi and no one else. On the spur of the moment, I headed for the phone and used our signal to phone Sethi's house. Within 5 minutes, she was phoning me back. "Hello, you," I said.
"Hello yourself," Sethi replied.
"So, what are you up to today, then?" I asked. I had to keep my voice down because Mum and Dad were upstairs. Jude was out, as per usual, so I was taking this opportunity to use the phone. I was hoping Sethi wouldn't have anything planned so that we could spend this Saturday together.
"I'm going shopping with Mother," Sethi wailed.
Poor you. I had to struggle to keep myself from laughing out loud at Sethi's tone of voice. She hated shopping at the best of times, and as for shopping with her mum, that must be her idea of hell on earth.
"It's not funny," Sethi snapped. "Of course not," I soothed.
Sethi gave a very undignified snort down the phone.
"You're laughing at me again? As if." "What are you going to be doing with the rest of the day, then?" Sethi asked me. "I thought I might go to the park, or maybe the beach. Maybe I'll do both. I haven't decided yet." "Yeah, that's right. Rub it in. Just think of all that lovely money you're going to spend," I told her. "Mother's going to spend it, not me."
"She's decided she needs some spending therapy," Sethi replied.
"Well, if you can't get out of it, get into it."
"I'd much rather be with you," Sethi admitted. There it was again, that familiar twist in my stomach whenever she said things like that to me.
"Hello?"
Sethi said uncertainly.
"I'm still here. Maybe we can meet up later this afternoon," I suggested.
Sethi sighed.
"I doubt it. Mum wants to buy me some dresses and update my school uniform, and she wants to buy herself an evening dress and some shoes. Just the shoes by themselves will take 3 or 4 hours at least."
"Why? Has your mother got duck's feet or something?"
"No, just a duck's taste in shoes. I swear, Callum, it's going to be torture."
"I might see you at the shopping centre, actually. I've got to get some things for school," I said.
"Like what?"
"Pens, rulers, and I was thinking of buying myself a new calculator."
"I'll keep my eyes open for you," Sethi said. "Maybe I'll see you at the cafe. You can stop me from going completely insane." "If I miss you at the centre, how about getting together this evening then? We could have a late picnic on the beach, around 6 o'clock. "I'll try, but I can't guarantee anything," Sethi said.
"Fair enough."
"Saturday in the Dundale Shopping Centre," Sethi groaned. "Just shoot me now and put me out of my misery."
Laughing, I said bye and put the phone down. And then I thought of Lynette again, and the laughter stopped.
Chapter 47. "Do you like these shoes?"
"Yes, Mother, they're really nice," I smiled.
"But those burgundy ones with the thin straps were better, weren't they?"
"What burgundy ones?"
"The ones we tried in Roberts and Miller," Mum replied.
"That was 4 shoe shops ago."
"Well, I really like these ones," I tried. "I think I'll go back to Roberts and Miller and try on those burgundy ones just once more." Ah!
Chapter 48. Lunch was over, without too much grief, for once. Jude had come home from heaven only knew where, so we'd all eaten together, which had made a change. Mum indulged in small talk, telling us all about what our neighbours and relatives and friends were up to, whilst Jude was his usual effervescent, scintillating self, and didn't say one word. No one was particularly bothered that I didn't have much to say either. Before I'd swallowed my last mouthful, my knife and fork clattered onto my plate and I jumped up. Grabbing my jacket off the back of the sofa, I headed for the door. "Where are you going?" Mum asked with a smile. "The shopping centre." Jude leapt up like a scalded cat. "Oh, no, you're not." I frowned at him. "I'll go where I ruddy like. Since when is it any of your business where I go?"
"Callum, you don't want to go there. Not today," Jude said nervously.
"Jude?" Mum stood up slowly. A tense, watchful atmosphere entered the room like chilling fog.
"Why shouldn't I go?"
I asked my brother. He didn't answer.
"What's going on?"
I persisted. I turned to Mum. She was staring at Jude, a stunned look on her face. From her expression, she was obviously well ahead of me.
"Don't go there, Callum," Jude told me pointedly.
But, and only then did I click. The Liberation Militia were planning something at the Dundale. Something Jude knew about. Something my brother didn't want me anywhere near. And then I remembered.
"Seffy's at the shopping centre," I said, horror-stricken.
"Callum," Jude began. I didn't wait to hear any more. I ran out of the house, leaving the front door wide open as I raced for the shopping centre.
Chapter 49. Mother was driving me nuts. In our 5 long, long hours together, I'd bitten my tongue so many times it had swollen up to the size of a football and was choking me. If she asked me for my opinion on one more pair of shoes, I couldn't be held responsible for my actions. I sipped my orange juice, grateful for the short but welcome break away from her. She'd gone back to the car park to pack away her various purchases. She was enjoying herself. I'm glad one of us was.
"Seffy, thank God! You have to get out of here!"
"Callum!" I beamed. "Where did you spring from?"
"Never mind that. You've got to leave this place now."
"But I haven't finished my drink."
"Never mind your ruddy drink. You have to leave. Now!"
I looked at Callum then. Really looked at him. He was scared. No, he was terrified. "What's going on?"
"Don't argue. Out!" Callum told me grimly.
"Come on!" Callum dragged me out of my seat and towards the cafe door.
"Excuse me, love, but is this boy troubling you?" a stranger asked as I was dragged past his table.
No, he's a friend of mine," I called back. "He wants to show me something."
Callum dragged me out of the cafe and along the concourse, and then every alarm in the world went off. At least, that's what it sounded like.
"What's going on?" I asked, looking around.
"Move it! Come on!" And we were running towards the nearest exit. Others around us were looking around and frowning, wondering what was going on. Maybe they saw Callum and I racing for the nearest exit. Maybe we started it. I don't know. But it seemed like moments later, everyone was shouting and racing for the exits. We were amongst the first ones out of the Dundale. We stumbled out into the spring sunshine, and still Callum had hold of my hand and was pulling me after him.
"Where are we going?" I asked breathlessly.
"Run! Come on!"
Callum puffed from beside me. "I thought I'd never find you. It took me almost half an hour to find you. Move!"
"Callum, I'm getting a stitch," I protested. "Tough, we've got to keep going."
"Callum, enough!"
I pulled my hand out of his. "You're..." Then there was a flash, like the very air was alight, followed a fraction of a second later by the most colossal boom. I was blown off my feet and into the air like a dry leaf in a high wind, and even from where we were, I could feel an intense heat on my back. I landed flat on my face, my arms outstretched. There was a strange ringing sound in my ears, and it wouldn't stop. For I don't know how long, I lay in a daze. Was I dead? Was this what it felt like to die? I closed my eyes tight and covered my ears, trying to block out the incessant ringing sound. Only it was inside my head, not outside. I swallowed hard and my ears popped and the ringing stopped. Twisting around, I turned to see what on earth had happened. Billowing smoke shot out of the shopping centre. For a moment, it was eerily quiet, like the end of the world. I wondered, panic-stricken, if the explosion had deafened me. And then I heard screaming and sirens and all hell was let loose. I turned to Callum, who lay stunned beside me. "Are you okay? You're not hurt?" Callum asked, anxiously, running his hands up and down my back and arms. You knew that was going to happen, I realised, aghast. You didn't... Tell me you didn't... I shook my head. No, that was preposterous. Callum had nothing to do with whatever that explosion was. It must have been a bomb, but Callum didn't do that. He wouldn't. He couldn't. But he knew. Mother! Oh, my God! I jumped to my feet and raced towards the car park across the street from the shopping centre. I was almost across the street when I remembered Callum. I turned around. But he was gone.
Chapter 50. I'd barely got the key in the lock before the front door was flung open and Mum pounced on me. Where have you been? You look terrible. Are you all right? Where's Jude? Isn't he with you?
Thought he was here, I said wearily, closing the front door behind me.
No, he left almost as soon as you did, said Mum. What happened? Didn't you hear? I asked, astonished. Hear what? She should have heard the explosion from here, but then again, maybe not. Our house was right across town from the shopping centre. It hasn't been on the telly? I turned to the TV, perplexed. The news wasn't on, just a rerun of some ridiculous detective programme where practically every lowlife in it was a nought. I recognised this episode. A cop was chasing a nought scumbag who'd shot and killed his partner. Callum, talk to me. What happened? Mum, we interrupt this programme to bring you a newsflash, a voice suddenly declared. My head whipped up. The telly's most popular newsreader appeared, his expression grim. My heart began to thump in a crazy way that made me feel physically sick. Please don't let it be something bad about us noughts, Mum breathed. Just under 30 minutes ago, a bomb exploded at the world-famous Dundale shopping centre. At least 7 people are known to have been killed outright, with scores more wounded. Casualties are being taken by ground and air ambulances to the local hospitals. All hospitals in the immediate area have been put on full alert. A warning was received from the Nord Group calling itself the Liberation Militia only 5 minutes before the bomb actually exploded. That's a lie, Jude said. Mum and I turned as one to see Jude standing in the doorway with Dad beside him. We turned back to the TV screen as Dad shut the front door. The newsreader's face was replaced by a TV camera at the scene. It swung around this way and that, filming the carnage of people lying on the ground. Windows shattered, blood on the concourse. There was no voiceover to accompany it. No voice echoing sorrow at the devastation. No voice filled with indignation. No sound at all, just silence, which made it worse. The camera focused on one woman sitting on the ground, rocking back and forth, blood running down her forehead and into her eyes. Onto the next atrocity, the camera moved in a jerky fashion, as if the person holding the camera was shaking, trembling, which he or she probably was. A child knelt by a man's side. The child was crying. The man was still. The camera was only on them for a second or two, but it was enough. The Prime Minister appeared on the screen, his expression angry and forbidding. If the Liberation Militia think this cowardly, barbaric act of terrorism is going to win over the vast population of this country to their way of thinking, then they are very much mistaken. All they've done is strengthen our resolve not to give in to such people or tactics. Dad, Jude whispered. Shh! Dad focused on the telly and nothing else. The newscaster's face reappeared. A senior police officer on the scene believes that the bomb was planted in a cafe bin inside the shopping centre, but stated that it was too early to speculate. He did promise, however, that the perpetrators of this crime would be brought to swift justice. There will be more information about this in our main news bulletin after the current programme. Once again, a bomb has gone off in the Dundale shopping centre, killing at least 7 people. The detective program returned, just as the cop gave a flying tackle and brought the killer naught to the ground.
Dad? What happened? You said...
Shh, boy, Dad admonished, looking at Mum. Mum used the remote to switch off the telly. Then she turned to look directly at Dad.
I'm going to ask you something, Ryan, and I want your solemn promise that you're going to tell me the truth.
Not now, Maggie. Dad headed for the stairs. Mum instantly moved to block his way.
Yes, now. Did you or Jude plant that bomb?
I don't know what you're talking about.
Damn it, Ryan, don't treat me like a cretin. Promise me you had nothing to do with this business.
Dad didn't speak. He regarded Mum, defiance in every bitter twist and turn of his expression.
What I did or didn't do is none of your business, Dad said at last.
I'd never heard Dad speak to Mum like that before. The pinched, angry look on Mum's face was an indication she'd never heard that tone of voice from Dad either. Mum and Dad regarded each other, their expressions setting harder and harder. They were standing perfectly still and moving further and further apart. Mum deliberately turned her back on Dad to face Jude.
Jude, did you plant that bomb?
No! Don't look at your father. I asked you a question. Now answer it.
Jude, keep your mouth shut. Do you hear?
Dad ordered grimly.
Jude, I'm still your mother.
Mum said very, very quietly.
Answer me. Please.
Desperately, Jude looked from Mum to Dad and back again.
Jude, said Mum.
We had to, Mum. Our cell was ordered to do it. Some of us set it up last night, but they said they'd phone through with the warning an hour before it went off. I swear they did. They said that everyone would be evacuated in plenty of time. The verbal waterfall tumbled from Jude's mouth.
You killed. You murdered all those people.
Mum whispered, appalled.
Dad said they would phone through with a warning. That's what he said. I don't understand.
Jude turned bewildered eyes towards Dad. Mum's whole body was shaking, heaving. Her lips clamped together as she struggled to stop herself from retching.
Maggie.
Dad's mask slipped for the first time that evening. He looked so forlorn. He touched Mum's arm.
She spun around and slapped his face so hard there was a crack as her fingers bent right back. You murdering, lying! You promised me there'd never be anything like this. You promised you'd only be involved in the background in planning.
You promised.
I didn't have any choice.
Once you're in, they've got you. And you have to do as you're told.
You don't. You could have said no. You should have said no.
I was protecting you, Maggie, and our sons. I had no choice.
Protecting us from what?
From something you inflicted on us in the first place, Mum dismissed.
Who do you think I'm doing all this for? Dad cried.
I know exactly who you're doing all this for. But she's dead, Ryan. And murdering innocent people won't bring her back.
You've got it wrong, Maggie.
Dad shook his head.
Have I?
I warned you, Ryan. I begged you not to involve Jude in all this.
Mum cradled her now limp right hand in her left. One of her fingers was bent back on itself in a definite V-shape.
I'm sorry, Dad began, but if anything, that just made things worse.
Sorry.
Sorry, Say that to the families of all those people you murdered, Mum yelled at him. How could you? I can't bear to look at you. Dad straightened up, his eyes flint-like again. The mask was back with a vengeance. At least now the Crosses will know we mean business. All those people killed and maimed, and that's all you have to say about it. Mum's voice dropped to a strange hush. They were legitimate targets, said Dad. Mum stared at Dad like she'd never seen him before. Silence. She turned away, wearily. In that case, we have nothing more to say to each other. Jude, could you take me to the hospital, please? I think I've broken one of my fingers.
I'll take you, Dad insisted.
I don't want you anywhere near me. Don't you ever come near me again, Mum hissed. Come on, Jude.
Jude looked at Dad, unsure of what to do. Dad nodded and turned away. Jude took Mum by her left arm and led her out of the house. Only when the door shut did Dad let go. Closing his eyes, he wrapped his arms around himself and bent his head, almost like he was praying. Except I knew he couldn't be because Dad doesn't believe in God. He began to tremble like old man Tony when he's got the DTs.
Dear Lord, please,
Dad began. But then he opened his eyes and saw me watching him. He started with surprise. A second or two passed before I saw recognition on his face. In everything that had happened, I'd been completely forgotten by everyone. I'll just go and see if Jude and Mum need my help, I stammered. It wasn't that I wanted to be with them so much, I just needed to get away to be somewhere else. Dad didn't try to stop me. I grabbed my jacket and headed out, shaking as the door shut behind me. The evening air was warm and welcome on my skin. Was I going to try and catch up with Mum and Jude, or just run and run and keep going, forever and ever, amen? I looked left, then right. My conscience made up my mind for me. I followed after Mum and Jude.
Chapter 51. If only I could stop my mind from spinning. If only I could shut out everyone and everything for just a few hours, just long enough to get some sleep, so that I could think clearly afterwards. But I couldn't switch off. After 2 fruitless hours of tossing and turning and counting everything from sheep to ring-tailed lemurs, I gave in and sat up as wide awake as I'd ever been. I glanced at the silver clock on my bedside table, a 14th birthday present a few months ago from my father, a present he'd probably never even seen. It was still quite early. I'd gone to bed early, mainly because Mother had insisted, but even the regular beat of the second hand counting away time couldn't lull me off to sleep tonight. Thank goodness Mother was okay. She was still packing away her shopping when the explosion went off. Glass from the centre was everywhere, scattered across most of the car park, and Mother was in a mad panic, screaming out my name over and over. The moment she saw me, she rushed towards me and gave me a hug which lifted me right off my feet. But we were okay, which is more than could be said for a lot of poor people still caught inside the Dundale when the bomb went off. "We should see if we can help," I'd said. "No way. We're leaving now, at once," Mother insisted, and no amount of arguing on my part could change her mind. She wanted to put as much space between us and the Dundale Centre as fast as possible. I wasn't sure about the wisdom of her driving us home, but we've managed to get back home okay. Mother then insisted on checking me over properly, but apart from a bruise on my forehead and a couple of grazes on my knees and hands, I was fine. outside. Inside, I couldn't get it out of my head that Callum had known about the bomb. He'd probably saved my life, but I almost wished he hadn't. Almost. With a sigh, I got up and headed downstairs to the kitchen. There had to be something I could do to help me to get to sleep. A glass of warm milk, perhaps. Mother was in her room, and Minnie was away, spending the weekend with her best friend. The kitchen was dark and silent, and strangely comforting. I got myself a glass from one of the cupboards and headed for the fridge. The moment I opened it, I was instantly flooded with light. What to drink? Warm milk or cold orange juice? In the fridge door was a half-full bottle of Chardonnay. I took out the bottle and swirled around the golden liquid. My mother lived in this bottle and others like it. She was probably upstairs now, drinking to forget today's events. Drinking to forget a lot of things. After a moment's hesitation, I poured myself just enough to cover the bottom of the glass. The first sip almost made me gag. It tasted like refined vinegar. What did Mother see in this stuff? I took another sip. After all, there had to be something to it if Mother liked it so much. Another sip. Then another. And another. I poured out a bit more. Half a glassful this time. I drank slowly but steadily. By the time I'd finished, Chardonnay didn't taste quite so bad. And it made me feel funny, pleasant inside, sort of warm and squishy. Pouring out a whole glassful, I headed back to my bedroom. I sat up in bed, sipping at my wine, feeling very grown up as I let it wash over me and through me and into me. My head started to sway from the inside out, backwards and forwards, rocking me gently. At last, I put down the empty glass and curled up in bed. This time, I didn't even have to think about trying to sleep. This time, I left the world behind the moment my head touched the pillow, and I slept like a log.
Chapter 52. Mercy Hospital was a sad joke. The rundown accident and emergency department was busting at the seams, and then some. It looked like many of the people there were naught casualties from the shopping centre. The walking walk-in wounded. There were people crying, shouting. One woman was screaming at regular five-second intervals, and no one was taking the least notice of her. The air smelt of strong, cheap disinfectant. It was so strong I could almost taste it as it caught at the back of my throat. But it still couldn't quite mask the nastier smell of vomit and blood and urine it was trying to disguise. The whole place reeked of barely organised chaos. All the nurses were noughts, and all but one of the doctors. I wondered what a cross doctor was doing at a nought hospital. Building his stairway to heaven, no doubt. I looked at my brother. He'd been involved in all this chaos and carnage around us. How did it make him feel to see the result of his handiwork? But he wasn't looking around. He was looking down at the ground, like his gaze was permanently stuck there. "Are you all right, Mum? I'll survive." Mum sat on one of the rock-hard benches, her face rigid and set as she cradled her purple-blue swollen finger. It looked awful. I kept stealing glances at Mum, wondering why she wasn't crying. It must have hurt like blazes. "Are you sure you're okay, Mum?" Jude asked, looking up at last. "Yes." 10 seconds later. "Are you all right, Mum?" I wasn't surprised when she finally barked at him. "No, I'm not all right, Jude. I've broken my finger. It hurts like hell, and I'm sick of your stupid questions. So just shut up, okay?" Everyone around us turned to look. Jude lowered his head, his cheeks flaming. Mum looked at Jude's bent head and sighed. "Look, I'm sorry, love." She carefully removed her good hand from underneath her bad and tried to put it on Jude's shoulder. Jude shrugged her off. "Jude, I'm mad at your dad, and I'm taking it out on you. I'm sorry, okay?" Mum put her hand on Jude's shoulder again. This time he didn't try to remove it. "Okay," Mum said softly. Jude shrugged and nodded at the same time. "Callum, go and get yourself a drink or something," said Mum. "Why?" "I want to talk to your brother in private. I have something to tell him. Mum, please, Jude began. This has nothing to do with the LM, Mum told him. This is about you and me. Can't I stay? I asked. No, do as you're told, Mum ordered. I walked over to the vending machine on the other side of the waiting room, but I wasn't thirsty. Besides which, I didn't have any...